So, Bill, until we get our next one, to follow back up on the possibilities of the big guys coming into Alaska. So I would imagine there's, you know, economies of scale, and maybe they don't see our markets as being worth doing that. But if they did, I'm curious if you think Alaskans would roll with that. I mean, it's a small state, and people, like, they wouldn't be able to pull one over on us. I think beer connoisseurs would know what you would hear about that. Do you think they would then not still support those brands?
I honestly don't know. There's a real bifurcation of opinion about that in the craft beer world. There's some people who view the big guys, Anheuser-Busch, Coors, Miller, as the enemy, right? This is they're the evil empire. They're what everybody has been fighting against and revolting against. That's why we have craft beer in the first place, is because of these guys and everything like that. And then there are other people who look at it and say, hey, I just judge it by the beer. If the beer is good, I will drink it. And if the beer is not, I won't. And I don't care who brewed it, whether it's that. I kind of lean a little more towards the evil empire side, simply because I don't like some of the tactics that I see the big guys using. They are well known for using their money and their muscle to basically tilt the playing field in their favor. They've been recently, every year it seems like one of them is getting caught and fined for basically breaking the rules that they're supposed to operate under by making kickbacks or under the table deals or offering quid pro quos with distributors and retailers, things that they are not supposed to do, but which they can get away with because they're big and they have a lot of money. So from that aspect, I typically don't give my money to a brewery that's owned by one of the big people. Even if they brew good beer, I mean, I won't turn the beer down. If somebody offers it to me at a party or something like that, I'm not going to say, oh, I won't drink that beer because it's brewed by a company that's owned and eventually by Anheuser-Busch. But I won't spend my money to buy it. That's kind of my personal rule that I make is, you know, I'll drink it, but I'm not going to give them my money. There's enough small, really craft breweries out there for me to give my money to. One of the things that can help you keep that straight, by the way, I mean, once again, if you're buying Alaskan beer breweries, you don't have to worry about it. But if you're buying something, if you're out in the lower 48 or you're in the liquor store and you're looking at something, there actually is an app for that I keep on my phone, because I can't keep track of all of the mergers and buyouts and stuff like that. And I pay a heck of a lot more of attention to it than the average person does. But if you go onto the app store and you look for an app that's called Craft Check, CHECK, it's a little free app that you can download on your phone, and you can type a brewery name or even scan a barcode in, and it will instantly say, yes, this is a craft brewery, or no, this is not. So it's a sad commentary that we've reached the point where you can look at a beer in the store and you can't tell whether that's actually owned by Miller or actually owned by Anheuser-Busch, which obviously is a telling commentary on what the big guys are actually hoping to accomplish when they buy one of these beers, because they don't proudly slap their name on it and say, you know, this is Blue Moon, proudly owned and brewed by Coors Brewing Company. No, they want you to walk in there and think, oh, Blue Moon, that must be a little craft brewery somewhere. Let me give, you know. So that's how they've gotten the nickname for some of these beers. They call them crafty beers instead of craft beers. But anyway, so that app is out there. It's called Craft Check. It's free. If you've got a smartphone, you can download it. And it's really handy because, like I said, even I sometimes find myself in the store and I'm looking at a beer and I'm like, I don't know. Let me check. Is this Anheuser-Busch or Miller or Coors? Or is it really some guy in a small brewery somewhere? So I don't know. I don't want to name a brewery because I feel like I'm putting somebody on the spot, but somebody came in and bought a brewery. You know, you would assume they would want one that at least was distributing statewide. So they're not going to buy a small brewery that's basically just selling in their local area. So it would be one of the people who at least had statewide distribution going on. But yeah, you know, they could come in and buy them and then take their beers and start brewing them on a massive scale down in the lower 48.
See,
and
yeah,
selling them across the lower 48.
Yeah. The financial benefit, I think, of a big, you know, a big conglomerate buying up an Alaska brewery I can't imagine being selling in the state of Alaska. Yeah. It would be the reverse because
yes.
Alaska has the mystique and we're pretty popular still right. with all the reality TV shows and all that. So I would think that, you know, having some glacial water fed, whatever mountain on the label and then sell it and
and then brew it in Newark
or whatever,
and sell
then,
it. Yes.
Yeah, I would think there would be a benefit to that.
That's kind of what Anheuser-Busch did with Goose Island Brewing Company out of Chicago, which is very famous as a local Chicago brewery, which they bought, I guess, about a decade ago now. And they are now selling their IPA, Goose Island IPA, nationwide, that is being brewed in giant Anheuser-Busch breweries. There's an excellent book about that. I can't remember the author's name now, but it's called Barrel Age Stouts and Sellouts, I think. Or Selling Out and Barrel Age Stout, something like that in the title. And it's a journalist in Chicago who goes over the whole history of Goose Island and how the sale happened and the impact of it and everything. It's a really good book. I think it came out last year, won several awards from the North American Guild of Beer Writers. So that's another one out there if you're interested in this question that I would really recommend. So if you've got any questions for us, you can send them to us on Facebook or please call at 283-8414. Be happy to take a stab at it.
I had one that came up recently, and I hadn't heard anything about this. And I know you're not real involved in the organization of it anymore, but mm-hmm. have you heard anything about Frozen River Fest this year?
No, I haven't heard anything specifically about that.
I know the chamber's been super cautious about yeah. anything they might do, and the city definitely has thoughts about what happens in that park. So
yeah,
I
haven't
know.
Heard anything one way or the other. I can see arguments for and against. On the plus side, it is definitely outdoors, and I'm not sure how coronavirus does at minus 15 outdoors. On the flip side, it is a festival. It is a bunch of people, you know, getting together. So, you know, when you're standing around the fire pit at minus 15 trying to stay warm, there's not a lot of social distancing going on. From that respect. So I honestly haven't heard anything one way or the other. If you put a gun to my head and made me bet right now, I would probably bet against it.
Given
happening.
Case rates at the moment.
Given the case rates at the moment. And, you know, once again, like everything else, if you're going to do it, you have to commit far enough in advance so that people can do it. That the brewers could make arrangements and you could get everything lined up. So my gut tells me probably not going to happen this year. Fingers crossed that by next fall, we've got enough of a handle on this darn thing so that we can have our Kenai Peninsula Beer Festival that the Soldotna Rotary does in August that we had to cancel this year because of the COVID. So, yeah, that's been one thing that, you know, a lot of organizations have taken serious hits because they were relying on beer festivals that we just couldn't have this year. Southeast Festival that they always have in Haines in May of every year canceled. The big, you know, festivals up in Anchorage and Fairbanks canceled. Our festival here canceled, so, and I doubt seriously that they'll be doing the Beer and Barley Wine Festival in Anchorage in January.
Right, that's an indoor.
Given the way things are looking, that doesn't look good for anybody. So,
Have you seen, I know you've participated in a couple of these, some sort of version of like a Zoom beer get together. I know some breweries are trying to figure that out.
Yeah,
Have you seen any successful attempts at that?
Well, yeah, I've seen moderately successful one that the Alaska Brewers Guild of Alaska did a few months ago. The hard part of it is basically people have to get their, the beer. So if you're going to be doing just the beers that are easy to get, it's not a particularly exciting beer festival. Most people go to beer festivals to try something new, something they can't get, something they can't get locally. So that makes it more challenging. They did try for the Brewers Guild of Alaska. They had some beers from Devil's Club Brewing in Juneau. They sent some of their beers to Anchorage, to like La Bodega, so people could go there and buy the beer so that they would have them for this virtual tasting and things like that. So I've seen some of those, but they're a long way from being able to go to a beer festival. Now, if we lived in a different state where you could, let's say, get beer through the mail or get beer shipped to you, like being a beer of the month club sort of thing, which is all that stuff's illegal in Alaska, which every time a new one opens, they always send me an email and say, hey, let me tell you about the new beer club. And I'm always like, yeah, will you ship to Alaska? No, thanks for telling me. I could even see where you were going to do one and you're like, okay, if you're going to, as part of joining, we're going to send you a box of the beers. Right. And then we'll all sit down and we'll taste them together. But I don't even believe that's legal in our state here. So that's always going to be a tough one. It's like somebody asked me if I was going to teach my beer class virtually. And I was like, no, I'm not, because there's so much of it that you can't do if you can't all sit there and taste the same beer. And, you know, it doesn't seem realistic to me to do that. So I've gone to a couple of them, but they've been less than inspiring. People keep having them because, hey, people are desperate to do something social and everything with beer. But it's going to be a tough one until we get this darn virus back in its box and we can all be in the same place and enjoy socializing together again. So,
So in Alaska, you need to get the distributors on board or somebody that could bring in something kind of exotic and then distribute.
Yeah,
that
but
sounds
even,
like a lot of
you know,
logistics.
Even in Alaska, you can't call up Kenai River on the phone and say, hey, ship me a box of beer.
Right.
Right? That's illegal. You have to have, if you live in a village that's not dry, you know, or is wet, you can call up a liquor store like Brown Jug or somebody like that and get some shipped to you under certain limitations and things like that. But once again, that makes it tricky, particularly if you're dealing with a brewery that doesn't distribute. Right. So, like I said, for this, they did kind of a one-off thing where the brewery sent the beer to a liquor store and then the liquor store would sell you the beer as a retailer, kind of a deal. But it's challenging. It's always challenging.
So. Well, we've got another Facebook question
for
you. Once again, the phone number is 283-8414. This is from Steve. There's been a bit of a buzz in the beer drinking community about Dogfish Head from Delaware distributing in the state, especially the 60, 90, and 120-minute IPAs. Yeah. Can you tell us when hops are added in the brewing process and what this contributes to in the final product and dry hopping?
Okay. Well, hops are added at different points for different purposes. The traditional old-fashioned homebrewing way that I grew up with when I started homebrewing 30-some-odd years ago was we added hops three times. We added some at the start of the boil. And these hops were going to, the heat and the length of the boil, were going to take the alpha acids that are in hops, one of the chemical things that are in hops, and it was going to isomerize them, which if you remember your basic chemistry, an isomer is an atom which has the same chemical makeup or molecule, same chemical makeup, but a different structure. So you had like left-hand ones and right-hand ones and all this kind of stuff. Anyway, it changes these alpha acids and it makes them taste bitter. So that's where the bittering part of hops came from. Then you would add some hops later in the boil for aroma and flavor, because the things that give you the aroma and flavor in hops are volatile. So they would be driven off by the boiling process. So you added some hops at the beginning for bitterness, then you added other hops at the end for flavor. And then if you wanted the beer to be even more hoppy, you could add hops after the entire brewing process was finished, which is called dry hopping. So after the beer had finished fermenting, before you put it in its final package, or if you were in Britain where this started, when you were moving it into the cask that it was going to be shipped out of the brewery from, you would add some hops to that cask so that the beer would be even hoppier when it got to the final destination. Now, as we have gone hop mad in this country, we have started adding tons of hops all the time at various things. The names for those beers, 60, 90, and 120-minute IPA, talks about, A, how long they're boiled, and B, they have continuous hop additions throughout that entire process. They basically have a machine that drops hops in for the entire time it's being boiled. So for 60 minutes IPA, it boils for 60 minutes, and they add hops for 60 minutes. The 90-minute, obviously 90 minutes, and they add hops for that entire time. And then the 120-minute is 2 full hours, adding hops the entire time. The beers are progressively stronger in alcohol and progressively stronger in hoppiness. If you would like to try some, I just saw some at Country Liquor this morning. A 4-pack of 120-minute Dogfish Head IPA will run you $40. $10 a bottle. Enjoy.
Really?
Really? Wow. $39.99 actually is what it said on the shelf. So it is a pricey little beer if you want to try it. I had some back years ago when Dogfish Head distributed in Alaska before they stopped for several years, but now they're distributing here again. It's a pretty impressive beer. My opinion is it needs to typically age a bit. It needs to be cellared a bit before you drink it. But that's a serious beer out there. They charge a lot of money for it, A, because they can, and B, because it does take a lot of money to make it. That's a lot of, twice as long to go the boiling process, twice as many hops, twice as much, or I don't know if it's twice, but a lot more malt to make it stronger and things like that. So you're paying for that whole process when you're forking out basically $10 for a 12-ounce bottle of the beer. But there you go. It's there for people that you want to try it. The three, my favorite is probably 90-minute. Of the three, that's just because I like 90-minute. It's drinkable without being overwhelming, and you can get a 6-pack for like $15 instead of a 4-pack for $40. So that's anyway, that's just me. Your mileage may vary. So anyway,
when the heck are we gonna hit the wall on the hop trend?
I think we already have. We are not seeing stuff. 120 IPA has been around for a long time. Like I said, they were brewing that 20 years ago, I think, at Dogfish Head. It isn't as insane as some of the hoppier beers that we've made. I think we're actually backing off the super uber bitter triple IPAs that we were seeing 5 or 6 years ago. the latest trend has been more towards the New England IPA style, which is the hazy, fruity ones.
Right.
That they get a lot of that hop, late hop addition, so they don't have the bitterness. They have more of the hop flavor and aroma, and they're using hop varieties that have a lot of tropical fruit notes to them. So they're not my favorites, because to me, drinking them is like chewing a pack of Juicy Fruit gum. And I prefer my beer to be clear rather than hazy. I'm, like I said, your mileage may vary. I'm more of an old school kind of guy when it comes to that sort of stuff. But we're also seeing, besides those, there's some trend towards what they call the brute IPAs, which I talked about on a show a few months ago, which are the really dry IPAs, that where they've been really fermented out, so they have a really a dry, light mouthfeel. So, yeah, you know, IPAs are still the big dog, though. Everybody's still brewing IPAs, wanting to drink IPAs. So it's just a question of where is it going to go next? We had black IPAs and white IPAs, and we had West Coast IPAs and triple IPAs, and then we went to New England IPAs, and you know, now we're kind of, it's unclear what the next big thing is going to be, because if I knew what the next big thing was going to be, I'd invest money in it and then I'd be rich. But we'll see when it gets here.
I was getting takeout at, I forget where I was. It was somewhere on the peninsula this summer, and they had a Alaska craft beer list that they were really making a big deal out of the variety of craft beers that they had on tap and in bottles that you could get. All but one was an IPA. I'm like, well, okay, you've got representation from across the state, but if somebody doesn't like an IPA, you got
stylistically,
one
that's
option.
A pretty limited thing. It's funny, the style. If I had to point to one style that is actually continuing to grow and is like stealthing its way, it's pilsners, because you know, for the longest time, pilsner was what craft beer was like rebelling against, because it had become super dominant, and like anything that becomes a mass product, it had kind of been driven to the least common denominator, you know, so that it offended no one, because it basically had been turned into what we think of when we have a Coors or a Miller or a Bud. There's nothing particularly distinctive about that. They've basically stripped away all the character, because if it's got character, somebody might not like it. So therefore we'll make it so nobody loves it, but nobody hates it. Therefore we can sell the most. But as a style, Pilsner is extremely distinctive. If you've ever been to St. Elias and had their Czech Pilsner, or I'm trying to think off the top of my head, but there's other Pilsners out there in this being brewed in the state. They are, they're a real tribute to the brewer, because they're very hard style to make, because they're so clean and stripped down. There's no place to hide mistakes. You know, a triple IPA that's loaded with hops and everything like that, that's got so much going on that you can hide a mistake there. It's not obvious, because you're being overwhelmed by all this other stuff. But where a Pilsner, it's so clean and so stripped down, there's nowhere to conceal anything but that any mistake that the brewer might make. So and that style is extremely popular with brewers. If you ask a typical craft brewer what is their favorite style of beer, or what one do they like to drink all the time, I submit that more than half of them will say Pilsners. Very few of them are going to say, oh yeah, IPAs, man, that's what I want to drink day in and day out. This super hoppy thing that's going to strip the enamel off my teeth, because it so has so much bitterness in it. Those things they're good to have once in a while, but they're very hard to drink every single day. Whereas a Pilsner, man, you can drink that stuff every day. It's just that kind of that's why it took the world by storm in the 19th century, is because as a style, it was very appealing and very drinkable and very thing. So if I had to point my finger at what the stealth growth style for the next few years is going to be, I'm going to say pilsners. So the brewing world seems to go to a fad, and then it comes back, right? It goes to try, and then it comes back to where it started, back to, you know, where there's a reason why this became so super popular. So that's my, for my money, that's what I'm going to say. Says as the guy who has got a six pack of IPA in his car, he's talking about, you know, pilsners and how great they are. But still, for drinkability, that style is hard to beat. And really hard to beat.
Versatility as far as pairing with food, since we are, now that Halloween is nearly behind us, we're getting into the holiday food season. Yeah. Is that, and we're coming up on the top of the hour here, but is that something you're perhaps going to be talking about next month or December?
Yeah, I'm sure I will bring, I will have a segment in November about pairing with various holiday type foods. We always do that. You know, as you say, pilsners pair with almost anything. They may not pair the best with everything, but they, there's very little that they don't go with to a certain degree. The other beer style out there that I always say, if I have no idea what I'm going to be eating and I need to pick a beer, I always go with a Saison, because a Belgian Saison style I find pretty much goes with everything. There's some things out there that may go better with certain things, but once again, I've never had anything that if I had a Saison with it, I would say, oh, no, no, these two things are terrible. There's no way they can work together. It's a good kind of a universal choice. If you don't know what to pick, you don't, if you're not familiar with the food, then a Saison or a Pilsner, either one of those is not a bad choice. But yes, we'll be talking about that, I'm sure, next month. I don't know what else we'll be talking about next month, because I haven't thought about next month yet. So trying to get through this month.
We'll have to tune in to find out. So. Well, thank you so much for being here, Bill. That was interesting as always.
My pleasure, Jenny. Thanks for doing this. Thanks for supporting the show. To everybody out there who called in or sent us questions, thank you so much. Next month, we will be back to our regular time at 11 on the fourth Thursday of the month. Fourth Saturday of the month. So look for us there. And meantime, support your local public radio station here, KDLL 91.9 FM. If we don't support it, we won't have it. And then I'll just have to sit at home and talk to myself. And that would be kind of depressing. So please support KDLL. And thank you very much for listening.
Until next month.
Till next month. Cheers.